Thank you for tuning in to the Essential Church Podcast, a church where we focus on restoration over denomination. If you're in the Virginia Beach area and would like to find out more about Essential Church, visit our webpage at essentialchurch.com.
You may be an ambassador to England or France. You might like to gamble, you might like to dance. You may be the heavyweight champion of the world. You may be a socialite with a long string of pearls, but you're gonna have to serve somebody. Yes, indeed, you're gonna have to serve somebody. Well, it may be the devil or it may be the Lord, but you're gonna have to serve somebody. Might be a rock and roll addict prancing on the stage. You might have drugs at your command, women in a cage. You may be a businessman or some high degree thief. They may call you doctor, well, they may call you cheap, but you're gonna have to serve somebody. Yes, y'all, you're gonna have to serve somebody.
Serve somebody.
Well, it may be the devil or it may be the Lord, but you're gonna have to serve somebody.
Serve somebody.
Thank you for serving. This was the best Easter egg hunt ever.
But you're gonna have to serve somebody.
There's a backstory behind Bob Dylan's song, You Gotta Serve Somebody. How many of you know Bob Dylan came to know Christ in the late 70s? His actually, if you go back and listen to his lyrics, they made a drastic change when he came to the Lord. Instead of singing about the things he was singing about, he started singing about, you gotta serve somebody. You gotta make a choice between, or am I gonna serve the Lord or am I gonna serve the devil? Am I gonna serve the Lord or am I gonna serve this world? And so there became a rift between Bob Dylan and who loved this song, and John Lennon, who hated this song. In fact, in one of the interviews, private interviews with John Lennon, he actually made this comment. He said, well, you got to serve somebody. I guess Bob Dylan wants to be a waiter. And so in direct response to this song, You Got to Serve Somebody, John Lennon wrote and released the song, Serve Yourself. And so it's just this very diametrically opposed view, one from a Christian point of view and one from the world point of view. In fact, Jesus talks about this in Scripture. He says, you're either going to serve God or you're going to serve mammon. And we all often associate mammon with just money, but in reality, the term there and what it's referring to is you're either going to serve God or you're going to serve the world. And so there's this view in song that literally puts this in perspective. And so we're going to talk about this morning. Who are you going to serve? Are you going to serve God or are you going to serve the world? You're going to serve yourself. Are you going to serve money? Are you going to serve the things of this world? Are you going to serve what's eternal? We've been talking since January 21st about habits. In fact, Pastor Steve started out by saying, you got to put in 10,000 hours of practice to master anything. And he loves basketball. Look at me. Do I look like a person that loves basketball? I look more like a basketball than somebody who loves basketball. And so I associate more with golf than basketball. And so I remember when Tiger Woods came on the scene and he was demolishing people on the course. I mean, he was winning tournaments by 10, 12 strokes. And I mean, literally, at one point, how many remember when Tiger won? I can't remember whether it was a leg or arm. He actually won the tournament with a broken bone. Anybody remember that? It was like, I'll beat you with one arm tied behind my back. No, seriously, I beat you with one arm tied behind my back. He literally won the tournament with a broken bone. And they did an interview with Phil Mickelson not long after Tiger came on. And the interview went something like this. Phil, what has changed since Tiger has entered the scene? And he said, I'll tell you what's changed, my practice habits. I'm like, what are you talking about? He said, I don't leave the putting green every day now until I put 100 4-foot putts in a row. He says, that is what's necessary to compete with this guy. I have changed my routine so much. I have changed my habits so much. For me to be competitive against Tiger Woods, I do not leave the putting surface every single day of practice until I put 100 4-foot putts in a row. Not 100 4-foot putts. 100 4-foot consecutive putts. That's what's changed. 10,000 hours to master anything. This is from a pro. Well, he went on after that, Pastor Steve went on to say that we have uphill dreams and downhill habits. Now, how many of you can relate to that? I got a lot of aspirations. I got a lot of things I want to do, but it just seems like I can't accomplish them. What's killing them? What's killing your dreams? What's killing your aspirations? Your habits. You want to know why your habits are killing your dreams? Because you're living unintentionally. Unintentional living leads to unintentional results. So you need intentional living to have intentional results. How many of you realize that 40% of your day is filled with habits? How many of you know how you got here today? How many of you know how you got to work tomorrow? Right? See, I drive about an hour every day to come down here to work, I get in the car. How many got one of these now? Little smartphones? So here's how my morning goes. I get up, I have a cup of coffee, I actually bring a coffee with me. I get in the car and I set this on the dashboard. And when I set it on the dashboard, I start the car. When I start the car, this stupid little thing comes on. Nobody touched it. It's sitting there by itself. It just comes on. And it says, you have an hour and 11 minutes. Traffic is light to 4020 Wareneck Road. Seriously? You have an hour and 30 minutes. Traffic is heavy this morning to 4020 Wareneck Road. It knows my habits. I usually have Fridays off, but leading up until this last weekend, or till this weekend, I've been having to swift shift my Mondays and my Fridays. And so normally I spend my Fridays with my granddaughters going to gymnastics, which is a lot of fun. And so when I get in the car on Friday, the last three Fridays, this thing pops up and says, you have 11 minutes to gymnastics. I'm like, shut up. It knows my habits. In fact, I text my wife one day. It's like this thing is telling me, you're taking the wrong day off. It knows my habits. And so 40% of our day is filled with just habits, whether they're good, bad, or indifferent, just habits. And then we talked about that habits are designed, or they come about three ways. You have a cue, which leads to a response, which leads to a reward. Want to change your habits? You change those three things. You can't work on all three of them at once, so you change one at a time. So if I want to change a habit, I change my cue. Like the example I gave was, I had a troop years ago that was an alcoholic. He went through the program. He got out of the program, was doing really well, got off one day, left the work environment, thought he was driving home. When he finally realized where he was at, he was standing at the convenience store where he always bought a six-pack. He was standing at the register with a six-pack in his hand, and he never even realized what he was doing. The cue was, he got in his car without a purpose and ended up doing what he'd always been doing for the last 10, 15 years. So we talked and we discussed, how are you going to prevent this? He said, I'm going to change my cue. Okay, what are you going to do? He said, when I leave work every day from now on, I'm going to pick up my gym bag and I'm going to go to my car. The gym bag is going to be my cue to go to the gym as opposed to going to the liquor store. You got to change the cue. You can change your reward. I was getting a reward for telling Pastor Steve we need to go to the gym. He would bring me a Sandbridge donut filled with lusciousness, and I got in trouble for talking about that a couple of Sundays ago, so now I don't get any donuts anymore, so the cue's been changed, so now we don't go to the gym. just how it is. I don't get rewarded. You don't go to the gym. I'm getting my workout because I'm working in the playground. I don't know what you're doing, but I'm getting my workout, so you no reward, no cue. So, no, seriously, that's how it's been. But seriously, he won't bring me any more donuts because I don't need them. But that's how you work out. How many of you have ever tried to change the response first? Let me give you a real easy one. How many of you have an anger issue? What sparks your anger? Somebody pushing your buttons, right? Can you stop anybody from cue pushing your buttons? Nope. Can you change the response? Man, it is difficult. It is. I mean, it's almost impossible to change that. Because here's my thing. For 40 years, my response was always, you push my buttons, I'm going to get angry at you. I'm going to tell you about it. So at age 40, I started, I'm going to change. And I can't go through the whole thing, but I'm going to change. Let me tell you what. Changing that response is difficult. You got to figure out how to change the cue or change the reward. You can fight that response. Don't get me wrong. You can fight it, but that's probably the most difficult one to change. But it is possible. You have to be intentional about it. And so cue, response, rewards. Then we talked about keystone habits, and we talked about these habits that if they have a domino effect in your life. Take, for example, how many of you go to bed early? How many of you go to bed late? Those that go to bed late, how do your morning start off? Don't talk to me till I have a cup of coffee. Here, I'm not picking on you. It's just an easy example. So if you start going to bed early or on time, you get up on time. When you get up on time, you get to have a nice slow morning. You get to have some coffee. You get to have some breakfast, which is the best meal of the day, no matter what time it is. And then you get to have time with your kids if you have kids. You get to have time with your spouse if you have a spouse. You get time to do the other things that are necessary in the morning. How did you do that? The habit of going to bed on time or early in the evening. It has a domino effect in your life. So we've talked about prayer and fasting and all those other things, perseverance. And so this morning we're going to talk about the keystone habit of serving. Because here, I'm here to tell you, serving, the habit of serving will change your life. Here are some statistical facts, some scientific studies. Do you realize that the habit of serving will allow you to live longer? The habit of serving will allow you to live longer without eating better and without exercising. I like this habit. Right? I mean, I don't have to eat better, and I don't have to exercise. If I just serve, I get to live longer. And these days, I want to live longer. I don't want to eat healthy. I should, because that also leads to the live longer thing. Do you also realize that having the habit of serving also brings greater joy and happiness to your life? How many of you have ever served somebody? You thought you were going to go do something and bless them, and you walk away from the serving opportunity being more blessed than you ever thought you would have been blessed. It happens all the time. When you are focused on other people and their needs and serving and meeting those needs, man, your life is just richer. It's fuller. You're joyful. It overcomes depression. There's just so much that comes out of a life filled with the habit of serving. Do you realize that a life filled with the habit of serving lowers your blood pressure and reduces your stress? How many need stress reduced in your life? You sir, I was reading an article, I was reading an article, I think it was yesterday, about this garage. I don't even remember where it's at, but this garage who has donated over $68,000 last year to serving single moms, homeless people by repairing their cars. They now have 32 people that volunteer their time to be a part of this movement to serve their community where there's a need. Why is that possible? Why is that so attractive? Because serving reduces stress. It makes you live longer. It allows you to live longer. It causes happiness. It causes joy. It reduces your blood pressure. How many got teenagers? How many of your teenagers obey? I mean, let me share this with you. The study says that when you get your teenagers involved in the habit of serving, the attitude of your teenagers change. How many would like the attitude of your teenagers to change? Yeah, right, wait, right? And so get them involved in serving. Why? Because they're no longer focused on their own problems, their own self-absorbed. They're just simply focused on other people, and their life will change. Now, if you got teenagers in here and you raised your hand, you're in trouble. Because they're going to say, let me show you how I'm going to serve. Right? Now, I'm just kidding, teenagers. That doesn't give you license. Life of service changes your attitude. It changes your focus. It changes a lot of things about your life. And serving is one of the best keystone habits we could build into our life. How many realize that in this world teaches us, like John, and serve yourself. What's in it for me? Climb the corporate ladder, right? But how many are striving for success in this world? I mean, success isn't a bad thing. So striving for success. But how many know that success is always a moving target? That target is always moving. If I could just reach this level in the corporate ladder, I'd be happy. No, you won't. Because when you get to that level, what are you going to want? Success just moved. And I get to that next level, what's moved? Success just moved. How many can hit a moving target? Anybody ever been skeet shooting? What if we speed those targets up really, really fast? You going to hit them? Probably not. Maybe. Maybe 1 out of 10. Is that success? Maybe 2 out of 10. Is that what's success? Success is a moving target in this world. Constantly is moving the bar from us. How many remember back in the day when the computers seemed like they were moving at lightning speed? Like you would buy a 286 and the 386 came out. You'd buy a 386 and you're looking at me like, what? I don't even know what that is. Most of you young people. Buy a 386, a 486 out. You buy a 486, a 786 is out. What? Where'd the other three numbers go? It just disappeared. I had a guy that I worked with spent 6 months. His name was Ron Izzo. He spent 6 months researching the best gaming computer that was on that was coming on the market. 6 months to figure out in 6 months from now what is going to be the best computer that I'll be in line with everything else. How many remember the billboards that used to have the sign, the car up there, and the guy next to him was this big computer and had like 386 on it, and the top of the billboard said 486. Ron bought this computer. He spent $3,200. I can remember him telling me $3,200 on this computer. He said, I ought to be good for a year. I kid you not. It was either within the week or the very next week, the next computer came out and doubled what his was doing. His computer was now on sale for $1,200. A week, and he lost $2,300 on that computer because the next successful thing hit the market. So the world is constantly pushing us to strive for success, to strive for success. And success is neutral. It's what we do with it and how we pursue it that makes all the difference. But here's what I want to challenge you with this morning. Instead of striving for success, how about we change that around and we start serving for significance? You see, when you strive for success, you're never going to get there, and you're always going to be frustrated. There's always going to be something in your life that just... How many have relationship problems? I mean, just work problems, and you have all these issues in your life, and just sit back and ask yourself, why do I have all these problems? Why is this bothering me so much? Is it because you're striving for something that's always moving? Well, if you step back away from that and say, all right, I want to be significant in my life. I want my life to matter. I want my life to have purpose. I want my life to mean something, then start serving. You see, there's a letter written to a church at Galatia that we're going to look at here in a minute. We're going to just look at a couple of verses of it. But this church in Galatia, there were this group of people that they were all about the outward appearance, what people thought about them. And in those days, just prior to Christ, the law was everything. And so if you kept the law, you were a good person. But how many of you realize that you could never keep the law? Right? We can't even keep the Ten Commandments. Jesus boiled it down to 2 commandments, love God and love others, right? How many of us can even keep those 2? Right? Because who am I supposed to love? How often am I supposed to love them? Yes. Well, what about my enemies? Yes. Well, what about my family? Yes. So there's this house on Sandbridge. It holds 38 people. It's ridiculously expensive for a week there, but it holds 38 people. And when you break it down, it's about $60 a night, which isn't bad. Let me ask you this question. What 38 people do you want to spend a week with? But you got to love them, right? I mean, that's what God says. Love God, love them. So let me ask you again, how many can keep the 2 commandments? So here's Galatia. They got all these commandments, and they're all about the outward appearance, and they're trying to keep these commandments. But some of them came along, and they found Jesus, and Jesus set us free from the law, right? And so now in their freedom, they're starting to live out their freedom like nobody else matters. So look at Galatians 5 and 13 with us. And he says this. He says, you, my brothers and sisters, were called to be free. Jesus came here to set you free from the bondage of the law. It would be like us coming in today. Jesus came to set you free from the bondage of the pursuit of success. Same kind of concept, because success is what? Mostly about the outward appearance. It's about what other people think of you. It's about what other people look at you. And success is not bad, don't get me wrong. It's how you pursue it, how you use it. But that's kind of the same concept here. And so we have these group of people that were called to be free. And then he says, but do not use your freedom to indulge the flesh. Rather, serve one another in humbly in love. For the entire law is fulfilled in keeping this one command: love your neighbor just as you love yourself. So here's this group of people. They've been set free, and now they realize that, man, I can do pretty much whatever I want. So in my own vernacular, all right, I can eat bacon now. I can eat sausage now. I can live life now and not feel guilty about it. And there's this other group of people over here that say, no, you might be set free, but you still need to abide by these laws. And so these group of people that are free are trying to be pulled back into this environment of what's on the outside matters. And Paul says, hey, wait a second. There's a problem with both of these perspectives. Yes, you've been set free. And you have the ability to eat bacon if you want. You have the ability to eat sausage if you want. You have the ability to live life as you want because you've been set free. But let me ask you a question. What benefit is that for those around you? So let's put it in our terms today. You have the ability to be as successful as you want. But in your success, what benefit is to those around you? Let me give you an example of this. And again, just thought about this. There was a story about, everybody know who Truett Cathy was? Chick-fil-A, you ate Chick-fil-A, that's Truett Cathy. And so, very rich man, very, very well-to-do man, and somebody ran across him in an airport, and he recognized him. He went up, got a card from him, got a signature from him, and just thought, man, that's the greatest thing. While he was there, he saw Truett walk off, but then Truett walked over to get his bags. Now, you would think a person like Truett would have somebody pick up his bags, but nope, he gets his own bags at the airport. So he walks over to the baggage carousel, and he retrieves his bag. Well, he looks up, and there's a single mom over there, and she's got all her kids with her, and she's trying to grab her bags as they come around on the belt. And Truett just walked over and said, man, point out your bags, and I'll get them for you. And he just picked up her bags and set them on the cart, and then he said, all right, where do you need to go? Seriously? Here's a guy that is well-to-do, that is very successful. There's nothing wrong with success. That's my point. But in his success, he never forgot to serve. And the person that witnessed that has never forgot that story. And he now lives that out. He teaches leadership. He pushes leadership. And he always pushes leadership from the servant aspect. If you're going to be a good leader, what did Jesus say? Who's the greatest? The one who serves the most. And so this idea, this habit of serving, yeah, you are free. Yes, you can do whatever you want. But if in your freedom, if you're not humbly serving one another, if you're not humbly loving one another, then what good is it in this lifetime? You can pursue whatever you want, but we ought to be serving for significance. And so we find this idea here. Jesus said the greatest commandment is what? To love God. How? With every aspect of your being. All your heart, all your soul, all your mind, everything. All aspects of it. And then he said, before the lawyers could even try to come up with a second question because they were trying to trap him, and he said, oh yeah, and the second greatest commandment. Now, we think a second is in God being first and man being second. The second greatest commandment is love others as you love yourself. But in reality, what it really says is, here's the greatest commandment, is to love God. And here's its co-equal: to love others as you love yourself. They're on the same plane. So let me ask you a question. How do you demonstrate love? Men, how many of you tell your spouse, your wife, you love them? I mean, you should raise your hand. You tell your women, how do you know? He does things for me. All right, men, I'm going to pick on us for a minute. So how many of us men love to do dishes? A couple of hands. Okay. Yeah, some of us love to do dishes because we have to. But how many of you men that don't normally do dishes, when you do dishes, you do them loud enough for your wife to know you did the dishes? Like clank, 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 clank. Why do you do that? So she will notice that you did the dishes. Let me ask you a question. If she came in and the kitchen was clean and the dishes were all put away, would she notice that the dishes were done? Yeah. So let me ask you a question. Husbands, wives, boyfriends, girlfriends, are there relationship problems in your life? You don't have to answer that out loud. You know how to resolve them? Start serving one another. The issues go away when you start serving. My wife and I used to have the opportunity to actually, I quit counseling because I'm terrible at it. Like my counseling is, do you know what to do? Yes, then do it. I'm not going to come do it for you. I mean, honestly, that's where I'm at. And so that's just my counseling habit. Do you know what to do? Yes, then do it. Because if you've got the tools, like if you know that a hammer drives a nail and you're over there with a screwdriver trying to drive the nail, you're stupid. I can't fix that for you. You got to pick up the hammer. So if you have the tools to build on your relationship and you're not using the tools, I can't help you. What I can tell you is serve. Start using them. I'm a slow learner. If I treat my wife like the queen that she is, after about 12 years of intentionally trying this, I realize she'll teach me or treat me like the king that she thinks I am. Makes all the difference in the world. We got to serve somebody, so why not serve them? So where do I begin? Well, you find the greatest need and you start meeting it. If your wife is stressed out, if your husband is stressed out, and they're not able to get to something in their life that needs to be done, then just go do it. Meet that need. Doesn't matter what it is, just go meet that need. My wife, Kelly, knows that my lifestyle right now is sporadic, and I try to get all the grass cut and everything else, and so she's like, he ain't ever going to get the grass cut. So we have a guy across the street that cuts grass, so she went over across to him and said, hey, Jeremy, how much you charge to cut the front yard? She's like, 20 bucks. Man, it's the best 20 bucks I ever spent. And it's because of her. That was the way that she served me. She's like, look, I'll take that off your plate. You don't have to worry about the grass no more. Like, you don't think that I realize that she loves me from that? She could tell me all day long she loves me, but she showed me she loves me. She served me in a way that demonstrated her love for me. Real quick, how many know Jeff Foxworthy? How many know Jeff Foxworthy leads a small group of 250 homeless men? Yeah, I didn't either. You know how Jeff started that ministry? Some guy came up and said, hey, I have this homeless ministry, and this is the short version of it. I have this homeless ministry, and I'd love for you to come down. I don't want you to raise any money. I don't want you to do any of that stuff. I just want you to come down and have lunch today. So he went down and had lunch today, and guy sat across the table from him, and Jeff said, so how'd you get here? He said, well, a few years ago, my mom killed herself. A year after that, my brother killed himself. 2 years after that, my dad killed himself. And he said, I just decided it wasn't worth it. And so I started using marijuana, I started using different drugs, I started drinking alcohol because I was just tired. I didn't need this in my life. And so as Jeff's listening to this story, he's like, man, if my mom killed herself, my brother killed himself, and my dad killed himself, I'd be sitting across the table. And so Jeff was sold. There was a need. This guy, he asked him down there, he said, what do you need from me? He said, just start a Bible study with these guys. They need hope. And so Jeff, the first night, I think he said he had 4 or 6 guys, and it went to 6 to 8, and 8 to 15, and it just kept growing. Now it's up to 250. And so either this last Christmas or the Christmas before, he went to the CEO of this ministry, and he said, hey, look, I want to give these guys $100 for Christmas. And he's like, hey, it's not good to give addicts $100. They'll just go get drunk. They'll just go get alcohol. They'll just go get whatever. It's not good. And Jeff was like, no, I trust these guys. I want to give them $100. And they went back and forth, and they settled on $50. And so Jeff went and got $50 for each of those 250 guys. And so he went and got the money. During that week, before the next Bible study, a local school burned down, elementary school burned down. And so the CEO and Jeff talked, and he was like, hey, whatever these guys are willing to give, we'll double it. Each of us will double it. And so they went that night, and Jeff gave $50 to every guy in that room, and they were so excited. I mean, can you imagine not having anything and somebody come give you a crisp $50 bill? And these guys were like, man, I can go buy my kids a present. I can get a bus ticket home. I haven't seen my parents in forever. And they were just naming off the things that they could do with this $50. None of it was, I can go buy drugs. None of it was, I can go get alcohol. It was all meeting needs in their own life. So then Jeff said, hey, look, that's your money. You can do whatever you want with it. But there was a school that burned down this last week, elementary school. And we've decided that whatever's donated tonight, I don't remember the guy's name, but John and myself, he's going to double it, and I'm going to double it, and we're going to provide supplies for these elementary school kids. They said every man in that room brought their $50 bill up and put it in the basket and began emptying out their pockets of whatever they had of value and put it in the basket. Why? Because they were serving for significance. They didn't have anything, but they knew that their life was significant. Why? Because they could serve somebody. I challenge you to go. There was a YouTube video of a man who gave a guy, I think it was $100 or $500, a homeless guy, just to see what he would do with it. He immediately went into a grocery store and began buying stuff. And he had bags of stuff, and he came out, and as this guy followed him, he began giving homeless people items from that bag, from that $100. He kept nothing for himself, and he went and stopped him. He said, "Why would you do this?" Because they have just as much need as I have, serving for significance, not striving for success. So you find the greatest need and you go meet it, whether it's in your home or in your work environment or even here in the church. How many of you participated in putting together the playground out there? Anybody in here? A couple of guys? How many of you were here yesterday and could witness the tons of kids on that playground yesterday? Anybody? I mean, at one point, it was like literally like standing room only on the platforms of these kids going down slides and playing around. In fact, Pastor Steve and I walked up at one point, just as this little boy was standing on the platform, did a side dive off into the mulch. And I looked at Pastor Steve and I said, "I guess that worked." Because he just bounced right back up and kept on going. Why would we come and do that? Because it's significant in the life of those kids and in the life of our community and the life of our church. How many of you were here and served yesterday? I mean, was that not awesome? I mean, we are guessing. We had 300 egg hunters, so that's 300 kids the age to go hunt eggs in this field out here. And we figure if each egg hunter had two family members with them, that would be 900 people at a minimum, plus the service. So we figure we had 1,000 or a little over 1,000 people out here. Here were some of the comments. "This is the best egg hunt I've ever been to." Even that little girl, or your little girl, "What an awesome statement. Best egg hunt I've ever been to." People would say, "Your people are so friendly." I don't have people. It's you. You are so. Had one mom hunt me down, and she said, "I just want to share with you what my girls have come up and said to me." She said, "They have come up to said to me on numerous times today and said, I have never been to a friendlier church. These people actually talk to me." Now, that is awesome and sad at the same time. It is awesome because that demonstrates who you are as servants. You're just authentic people, and you love and you share with them, and you're just here to serve and make a difference in their life. And that is an amazing thing. Serving for significance over striving for success. How many of you have ever been down to the kids' hallway and looked in those rooms? Anybody? There are some people down there that when you look in there, you go, "I'd have never thought that person would be in there." How many of you know Fred Storminger? Fred is this gruff old farmer. That's the easiest way for me to explain. In the video, the guy that was making cotton candy with the cotton candy all over him, that's Fred. He's got a. But normally when you talk to Fred, I mean, he's the nicest guy. I would never in a million years expect to see Fred in the fourth and fifth grade boys' room. Bless Fred. Because I don't want to be in the fourth and fifth grade boys' room. Right? But you want to know how Fred got there? Several years ago, there was a need for somebody to be in the fourth and fifth grade boys' room. And Fred saw a need, and Fred stepped into that and said, "I'll do it." Do you really think Fred thought that I'm going to love fourth and fifth grade boys? Here's what I'll tell you today. You won't drag Fred out of that room. Why? Because he stepped up to serve and he found a significant spot in his life that he could make a difference. He had no idea. Jeff Foxworthy went to this homeless shelter, found a group of men. He had no idea what he was in for. Now he's got 250 men in a small group. I'd hate to see a large group. But he's making a difference in these men's lives. Why? Because he saw a need and he just stepped up and he met it. How many of you serve here on a regular basis? Thank you. Do you know that this morning, there are some people that drove into that parking lot this morning that have had one of the most horrendous weeks they've ever experienced? And a smiling face that met them in the parking lot changed their day. Or the person that met them at this door that handed him a bulletin and said, "Man, we're great. We're so glad to see you," changed their life. Or when they came in here, they were part of this wonderful music or this semi-okay message, their lives were changed. See, we are all on a journey somewhere at some point, at some time. And we have no idea what's going on in somebody else's life. And when you step up in this environment and say, "I'm going to meet the greatest need and I'm going to serve," you are making a significant change in somebody else's life, but you are going to receive the greatest benefit and you don't even realize it. Because serving for significance will change your life, and making this a habit will do more than you ever could imagine. And here's the thing, if we choose not to do this, Paul addresses this in his letter to Galatians. He says, if you choose not to do this, and Galatians 5 and 15 says, if you choose instead to bite and to devour each other, watch out, or you will be destroyed by one another. If you choose not to serve your spouse, if you choose not to serve at work, if you choose not to serve in your life, then your life will become frustrated and your marriage will become frustrated and you will begin to devour one another. I've experienced this. I got to the point in my life, in my marriage, and my wife sitting right there, and I got to the point where all we did was fight. And we were just looking out for our own self-interests. And what changed it around was when we began to serve one another. We've been married 32 years, be 33 years this year because she's a saint. That is just reality. Just reality. I get up every morning. People think I don't do this. I get up every morning and praise the Lord as she still lays next to me in the bed. Why? Because we changed our focus. Instead of going after each other for our own interest, we said, we're just going to serve one another. And just like the song, you're going to serve somebody. And let me just be brutally honest with you. You're going to serve the world. If you're going to serve yourself, then what Paul said is going to come true. You're going to bite and devour, and you're going to destroy one another. So the choice is yours. The choice is yours. Now I'm going to challenge you this morning. Like that, right after I'm going to challenge you. I am. We don't ask much, but when we do ask, it's a big ask. And so I'm going to ask you to tear off the bottom portion of this tab. If you don't serve, I'm going to ask you to take this and tear it off. I'm going to ask you to put your name on it. And I'm going to ask you to put down here where you want to serve. Because I'm here to tell you, you want to change your life, you start serving. And this is an easy road for you to serve. You can serve once a week, once a month, once every 2 months, wherever you want to start. Just put down here where you want to serve. And here, we like these even better. Put down here, "I don't know where I want to serve." We'll find you a place. We'll find you a place. No, seriously, we will. Challenge. I mean, we spent all this time on the habits because we believe they're important. 40% of your day is taken up by habits. Don't you want to know what the habits you're taking up your day with are? I mean, you got to serve somebody. You will serve somebody. Will it be the world or will it be the Lord? Father, we love you and praise you. Thank you so much for this morning. Thank you for the opportunity to discuss and just have a conversation about serving. God, we thank you so much because you are our ultimate example of serving. You who created us and loved us, formed us from the dust of the earth, breathed life into us. We turned our backs on you, stab you every chance we get. Yet you have demonstrated a love for us that we will never fully understand, I don't think. And you served us when you sent your son to us. He said, "I came to serve and to give my life a ransom." And so, Father, this morning we thank you for that, and we give you praise in his precious name. Amen.
Thank you for listening to the Essential Church Podcast. Let me encourage you to pause for a moment and reflect on what you've heard. It's not the hearing of the word, but the application that makes all the difference.